96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian AM. I'm Hubert Edwards and we're here to have a discussion. And the discussion, we always try to keep it informative, we always try to keep it sensitive, we always try to keep it lively and useful. So in the last couple of weeks, we have been having a number of discussions around some social issues and how those social issues are really colliding with the legal system in some regards and what persons view as, you know, what is reasonable, what is unreasonable, what should be, what shouldn't be. This morning, I want to jump in on that too, but really from a slightly different perspective. I want to look at this idea of leadership and social issues, leadership and the state of our social affairs, and kind of the interaction and the interrelationship between the two. Because what we have seen in recent days, and I think part and parcel of what has given great impetus to the current discussion, especially around the issue of non-consenting minors being involved in sexual relationships with adults. Predominantly, the one in the news is usually a male adult female minor. But certain of the laws have been written, as I understand them, which is gender neutral. But in the main, some of the impetus of the discussion, some of the fire behind the discussion, is largely being part and parcel based on the response of persons in leadership. And I'm not going to get into anything specific there. Other persons have discussed it. It's not a matter that I necessarily want to get into. But there's a positive side to this whole discussion. There are positive elements within the discussion. And those are the things which I would like to highlight this morning. And I have a lot of questions. I don't really have the answers you usually do. So you can write at 422-4796. Or you can call in at 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259, and we can put your answers against my question, and hopefully out of that whole process, we could have some valuable information. So what is the effect of leadership on society, and therefore at any point in time, the state of our social affairs? I listened very pointedly to a statement made by the president of the Senate. And it is quoted here in the newspaper. It says, societal laws must reflect, societal values. Very, very important statement. Societal laws must reflect societal status. And I agree with her. 100%. In context, if I can see the rest of this thing, she said that what we value, we must protect. What we value, we must protect. The vulnerable in our society, from Grand Bahama in the north to Inagua in the south need to be protected, need to feel safe, and need to be empowered. Quite a few big words in there. Empowered, safe, protected, vulnerable. But it starts by saying that societal laws must reflect societal values. The question I have, turning that on the head, is basically, is there an argument to be made that the laws that we have on the books today, currently, as they are, actually reflects societal value? Because if that is not the case, then why have they persisted? Why have they remained unappealed, unrepealed? So isn't the laws that we have currently in the Bahamas reflective of our societal value? For whatsoever reason, they have not been adjusted for a number of years. So if we protect what we value, and laws are there for protection and empowerment, and there are vulnerable pockets within our society that needs protection, but doesn't get protection because the laws have not changed consistently over a number of years. For all of those persons who lead, who had the opportunity to lead, and who did not or felt that they could not make the change, the question is, why is this so? And then the further extension to that is, isn't the action or inaction informed by who we believe we are as a society? Or at least who the leaders think we are as a society? Isn't that so? So, as the president rightly says, societal laws should reflect societal value. And I think she says it in the sense that, based on the current situation, the assumption is that we are not, as a community, as a country, as a nation, supportive of what currently exists, what currently persists. The output of that argument is that there should be change, and I agree with her from that perspective. But my further question, and maybe I'm just simply trying to be provocative, maybe, but then the question is, isn't it reflective of who we are by our actions or inactions? Because laws don't just get there. They are placed there by us. Of course, not you and I per se, but the representatives of us. And they can be changed by the representatives of us. And usually, a law is changed when you have a notion that it no longer serves the benefit of the society, or when the leadership taps into the psyche of the society and realize that there is some unsettledness there. There is a desire, a need, a calling, a longing for a fundamental shift. And so that shift takes place. As is, I think, likely to be the case in short order. So the question is, why has these laws, why have they persisted over such a long period? We are where we are because of the sum total of the views and actions or inactions of all who have led us up to now. I think that's simply it. And as we grapple with the ones in front of us now, we grapple with the thing which is before us at the moment, we always have to be mindful that there are other things. There are other eras. Some we have seen in the past, like, for example, when there was a discussion around equity or equality for the sexes, women having the same right as male and so on and so forth. We have grappled with these things before. And in every single instance, they have failed spectacularly. Spectacularly. Now, here is, here's where the difference is in the current discussion around rape, marital rape, so on and so forth. Here's the difference between that and the equality for the sexes. In the instance of the equality for the sexes, it is believed, subject to this law, which, well, this case, which is going to be ruled on by the Privy Council. But it's generally believed that some of the changes needed to be made have to be made by a change of the Constitution. Why is that important in this discussion? Because in order for the Constitution to be changed, unlike ordinary legislation, the persons in Parliament can't just change it. They have to appeal to the general populace. They must appeal to the general populace. And when they have done so in two instances that I can remember in the past, both instances have failed spectacularly, big time. Now, you can take it and rationalize it and say it failed because of this, this, and this reason. At the end of the day, the way I see it, and this is how I think, the objective, the main objective was to give rights to a vulnerable segment. In that instance, from that perspective, a woman not having the right to pass on her citizenship or lineage to her child. It's a vulnerable population. Maybe large, but still vulnerable for the purpose of that discussion. So if we use that principle and we think about what the President of the Senate says, that laws are supposed to protect vulnerable segments. Why is it when there is an appeal to the general populace to fix a vulnerable segment, there is no action? But then on the other hand, there is always this big major call for leaders to fix something else because it doesn't require other person's involvement. It doesn't require the large populace involvement. It says to me that the things which get fixed may not necessarily be reflective of societal values. Because when certain other things are presented, they fail. And that those things are therefore more reflective of where the society sees itself. So how are we going to change? What are some of the things that we're going to do? We're going to look around and we're going to say, well, you know, who makes the decision? Where does our moral compass come from? Is the moral compass embodied in the legislature? Is our moral compass embodied in the church, the clergy, the Christian council? Or is the moral compass for the Bahamas endemic in the general populace? Where is the moral compass on these important social, societal issues? Who is responsible ultimately for where we are? Now, you know, the old argument around the age of consent is for me an easy one. You know, increase it. I have no issue with that at all. I believe that I'm a male, so from a man perspective, a male perspective, shouldn't be running around looking for little children to be with. And I consider a child up to 18 to be a child. That's a child. My two daughters at the age of 18 are children. I still, one, you know, both of them are now over 18. You know, one is 19, still consider a child. But the fact of the matter is, who gets to decide? Where is the moral compass? When we look at where we are at the age of 16 for consent, we know it has some historical underpinnings from back in the days when people used to have children from their 12, get married, da-da-da-da-da. But right now, society is saying, that's not a good look. That don't really sit well with us anymore. And so we are going to do away with it. So out of this whole process, I believe, really, the conversations with, and some persons do not like to have them, but I believe that the conversations are good. I always believe that when you see a coming together, unfortunately, sometimes it comes out of, you know, difficult and adverse circumstances for some person. There's usually somebody somewhere down the line who is suffering publicly, maybe, because there are other persons who suffer in private. But there may be a couple of persons, a couple of instances where there is a public outcry because this has now spilled over into the public square and we are now aware of that. But I believe that when these happen, it's always a good time to test our system of democracy, to test the way that we are led, to test the responsiveness of leadership, to get an idea of where society actually hangs its hat as far as these social standards are concerned. And it seemed like, it would seem, as if in this instance, there's going to be some move. There's going to be some move to make changes. We have a Texas here which says those laws are probably relevant for the time they were developed, yeah? There is no secret that many persons have been calling for the laws on the books to be reviewed and probably updated and improved. Many of our politicians have been, for the most part, lawyers, qualified enough to ensure that laws are always relevant to the times. If there are loopholes that cause a citizen to be vulnerable, for example, then obviously it needs review and updated, etc. And so I agree with you that persons have been calling. My larger question, though, Texter, is why hasn't it changed? Why have these things meandered over such a long time? Why are we in 2022, for example, having conversations about where let me not make this point. I was going to make a point about the age of consent. But the truth is, the Bahamas is not an outlier in that regard. It's really not an outlier. Because at the crux of the matter, really, is not so much the age of consent, you know. It's the fact that society is responding to what it sees maybe as an injustice or a stimuli out there which will not send the right signal to the persons which the law is designed to guard against. So if it is 16, let's say that it remains at 16, and an individual is in transgression of that law, pretty much the public is saying, you know, send him away, or in Bohemian parlance, lost him in Foxhill. That's kind of pretty much what persons are saying. Now, you may be willing to rationalize and say there are extenuating circumstances and so on and so forth, but the call is for the penalty to be harsh. And maybe sometimes we are looking at the threshold, but not necessarily looking at some of the underlying other impacts that's driving this. We have a call on the line. Caller, go ahead.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I am doing great.
Good. I'm glad you're keeping this topic alive.
Yeah. Can you speak up a little bit more?
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, because, you know, we always touch on things, and then, you know, gradually it just disappears from the discussion. But I think it's long overdue,
mm-hmm.
and it needs to be had, of this discussion, and action needs to be had. And I think, in reference to the laws, I want to put my voice as to support the age of 18 as consent,
mm-hmm.
and much stringent laws need to be enacted. However, with the new laws and with the age adjustment, there has to be much more work that goes into these, along with these things, because we make laws and they're far too long, you know, they're ignored. And, you know, it comes from all sectors of the parents. We need more, much more parental, parental involvement.
Mm-hmm.
We need much more, and I would like to hear what your thoughts are on with the social media aspect of it, because it's been happening for years. This thing has been happening for so many years, and I think we gloss over it. It's like a little gossip in the corner or a little gossip over here, but now that it's such a bright light that's been shown, you know, on it,
mm-hmm.
because of social media, because of our children, I call them, you know, young people, have an access to social media, and the temptation is much greater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the peer pressure, the attempts to dress and act as a great friend to the children instead of actual parents.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to all get, you know, as far as enforcing and
I think we're losing your caller. Maybe you have a yeah, we can't hear her. You have a call. Maybe you should just call back and we can get your thoughts. I was really enjoying what you're saying. But yes, I think social media has played a part. Social media have its negatives. But of course, the ability for advocacy and the ability to get a better sense of where society is, for leadership to kind of feel where society is because of more... a multiplicity of individuals are, you know, putting their contribution, because some of us are braver in writing rather than stepping out in the crowd and speaking, because it gives you some level of anonymity. You know, there is it's a powerful tool. It's a powerful tool, and it should be used for good. But at the end of the day, the message here is, why did we take so long? And why are we simply looking at the threshold? It's an important thing. But why are we simply looking at the threshold when the underlying cry, even though it may not be articulated as such, is really about not the threshold in this instance, but the fact that an act was carried out and the punishment which was exacted felt a little bit light to the public. This texter said, I had the same thought. I look at all those politicians stepping forward and expressing their support of raising the age of consent, and I did not look at it as courageous. I look at it as pandering and easy. Can you count how many of those very same passionate and vocal MPs have given a concrete position on marital rape or oil drilling or shantytowns? It's crickets out there on our representation. Crickets, I don't know what the last part means, sorry. But yeah, hear you. I'm going to say a little bit about that. We have a caller. Let's take a caller quickly before we get into our break. Caller, go ahead. You're on Guardian AM. Caller, go ahead, quickly.
Yeah, good morning.
I'm doing great.
I'd like to get on the talk show.
You are on the talk show.
Huh?
You are on the talk show. Go ahead.
Okay, this is Edward.
This is he.
Yes, sir. Okay, my contribution to this is, like, when something happens, everybody drums on, and like you saying, they said, kill this one, throw the key away, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I happen to be a former police officer who worked in court,
mm-hmm.
right? And I'm going to give you a story of a young man, 19 years old. 19 years old at the time. He met a young lady who had a child. She was about 15. He met her, was taking care of her and the child. And then the mother wanted him to take care of her. This came out in court. And because it was not his child, of course, the mother made the complaint against him that he having sexual intercourse with his daughter.
Okay.
At the time, he went to court. Evidence came out. All of that evidence came out. And, you know, the judge cried. You know what the judge said? The judge said, young man, I understand what's going on, but my hands are tied because of the law. So when people hear about plea bargain and these other things, there's a reason for it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, and I will certainly support you from the perspective you're coming from. But in context, when you put your example against the most recent example, you realize that they're night and day, right?
Well,
you realize that they're night and day. Yes or no?
They're night and day in terms of one man going to prison, who I think a young man going to prison, knowingly, innocently in his mind, doing something that he thought was good.
That is the difference you see. That's the only difference you see between the two?
You know, because while everybody was on Mr. I understand Mr. Mundo, because
I'm asking you a question. I'm asking you whether or not that is the only difference you see between the two circumstances, the one you described to us and the most recent incident. Young man went to prison and this other individual may have gone to prison for a shorter time. That's the only difference you see between them.
The difference is a young man, went to jail for 7 years, right?
Yeah.
And because at that point in time, we had no plea bargaining.
Okay.
All right?
Right.
And so what I'm saying is the law, I understood some Mr. David White said everybody should get the maximum, right? You can't live in this world because every case has its own merit.
I agree with you.
All right? So you can't just throw away the key on every situation. You have to deal with each and every case on its own merit.
Yes, that's why
right?
It's a case.
And I understand the Bahamas, and you know this, you've been here for some time. Anytime a subject comes up, everybody gets involved and just do this and do that.
All right.
And another point with that was this.
Yeah, quickly.
Is while we can go and make laws or say we can make laws, right? The laws must be in line with the accused constitutional right, right?
Yeah.
Because if you make laws just because you're emotional and you go to the appeal court or the Privy Council and it's not in the constitutional right, it's going to be overturned.
Yeah, that's fine. I totally agree with that, but also remember that case law is too a part of the law and the court is there to help refine and provide guardrails for that whole process. Thank you so much for your contribution. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'll speak a little bit about some of the things which that the caller just mentioned and the fact that, you know, he looked at it, he looked at his two examples within this narrow scope. You listen to Guardian AM. Don't move. Come right back.
Is that BTC has the best rates. Now, the best rates just got better because you pay half the price of the other guys with your BTC home internet and mobile services combined. Switching to BTC is a no-brainer because I pay less with BTC and get super fast internet with speeds up to 600 megs. The other guys, their internet only go up to 105 megs.
Get all the internet you want at half the price when you bundle your home internet and mobile. Visit a BTC store to make the switch today. Conditions apply.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. We're sitting in for a very brief conversation. So the texter came back to explain this to me. Crickets on representation is an analogy to nights when it's so quiet and the only thing you can hear are crickets chirping. Crickets means everyone mouth shut up when real courage in the House of Assembly is required. So, okay. Explain that. Just quickly before we go to this other caller, the question, or no, the example which was given by the last caller of the young man, 19-year-old, who went to prison because of those circumstances. I believe, yes, if there was plea bargaining, if there was some other form of him getting out of what's considered to be a strict liability, then that should have been applied. But in this instance, if you put the two scenarios together, that's not the only thing at play here. This was a clear 40-year-old man, a 14-year-old child, fundamentally different. And I believe that given the facts that you stated, assuming that they are the real facts, there should have been some scope for the court to have been able to deal with that differently. The extent to which the court didn't have that ability represents a failing, a weakness in the legislation itself. And maybe here now is an opportunity, in addition to the things which we are calling for that too to be rectified one time. We have a caller. Caller, go ahead. You're on Guardian AM.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Edwards.
Hi, morning. How you doing?
I'm great. Mr. Edwards, put on your diver suit and take it down in some deep, deep waters.
Yeah.
All right? Okay. What about when you find a young female who is being seduced or, to follow that promiscuous lifestyle when it comes to being a lesbian?
Okay.
And the female... who wants to cry out but is scared to cry out?
Yeah.
Where does that leave?
Okay, I don't understand why I should put on a diving suit for that, because you diving in a teacup. The fact of the matter, the fact of the matter is that the legislation, as written, right, is gender neutral. In the instance of that particular relationship, the same outcome applies. Now, we understand some of the social nuances and why some persons may or may not cry out in that instance. But on the instant of the complaint, every single thing else applies. There's nothing different with it.
But Mr. Edwards, the point I'm trying to bring to you is still a child.
We just agree that. That's what I just said.
Right.
Everything else remains the same. As long as there's a complaint, the only issue you have at play in this argument is the fact that some persons may not be very willing to come forward in those circumstances.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, I respect that. Let's take it from a different angle then.
Okay.
Why is it in our country that when it comes to this topic or subject of marital rape, you hear everybody crying out, everybody this and that, people calling talk shows, going on social media, whatever, how they voice their opinions. But when it comes to the vulnerable children in this country, the most times we hear people cry out is when something happened. How many rape now as we speak on this radio.
You're still diving in this teacup, man. listen. I have an advantage over you just now because I heard you made this argument before on another show, right? So I'm kind of familiar with what you're saying. The fact of the matter is, right, these are two separate things which requires equal and separate treatment. Don't pit them against each other. Don't pit them against each other.
Don't get me wrong. Listen to me for a second. I am not putting those with the same... in the same category, you know. I'm saying when it comes to children, I'm using the terminology children.
Yeah.
That's what I'm using in this. I'm talking about whether it's a man or a woman.
Yes.
I'm saying, how is it in our country
mm-hmm.
that we live in? Why is it that the topic when it comes to children is not supersede this marital rape?
No, and Carla, with all due respect, if I allow you to do that, if I allow you to walk away with that, you're basically saying, right?
Yes, sir.
That a child, and a child is very important, but you're basically saying that an offense against an individual, an offense against a human being, what some person consider to be a transgression of a human right should be diminished because of adulthood. That just don't hold any water. That just don't make any sense. The fact of the matter, it should be treated as a crime, and the other thing which is a crime should be enforced. As simple as that.
Mr. Edward, I can come back to the point one more time.
Yeah, go ahead.
I am talking about the let me see if I can bring it home a little bit more easy. You got like
quickly.
Child protection. Like, I don't want to call people names. I don't like to call people names. I'm saying to you that when it comes to children in this country, I don't care how anybody try to change anything. The outcry when it comes to protecting the children in this country is zero to none.
Okay.
The only time when you hear, listen to me, Mr. Edwards, with the greatest respect to you, like you say, the only time when you hear people talk about children or children being molested or whatever the case may be, or being harmed or being killed, is when something happens.
Okay. All right.
That's all I'm simply saying.
You're a little bit clearer now.
For the children.
All right. I'm with you. I think you're clearer.
Yes, sir.
The way you kind of seem as if you were pitting or comparing and contrasting.
No. I will never compare. Like the gentleman said, every crime levies a different sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not even going to put myself in that in that equation of trying to explain it. I'm saying to you, where's the outcry when it comes to the children? Now, however you put it, whether they get raped, whether they get killed, whether they get molested, I'm talking about where is the outcry for the children?
I got you. And so you and I are joining voice, and we are creating, and we are continuing, and we will always continue this outcry
because we have to support
our children.
Mr. Edwards, when we call these talk shows.
Yes.
When you have persons who can understand where you're trying to come from, whether we agree or disagree, but you can respect my opinion and I can respect your opinion. That's what you call a healthy conversation.
That's what we're here for, to facilitate each other.
Sir.
Thank you, sir. We have another caller. Caller, go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Edward.
Good morning. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm all right. The former officer who called and gave the human story is a perfect example of why it should be the way he said. And so I would like to remind the people is that pedophilia is very much common amongst the elites. Also, you can read an article about Disney and Nickelodeon, et cetera, and you know about the Catholic Church. But the thing is, pedophilia is really, what happens is people don't understand the reason for it being 16. And even if it's 18, it doesn't matter to me. But it's an attraction to someone who hasn't gone through puberty, sexual puberty. So you're attracted to someone who's not fully matured. So that's where the sickness lies.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing is, right, Mr. Edwards, I think the texter tried to get it to Dwight one morning. We in the States, right? See, we following them. I'm hearing about something called the close consent paradigm, where, all right, the gentleman was 19 and the lady was 15. So that's a four-year difference. So that's not bad. So if the person was 18 and they were 15, then it's still. So in the States, it is mitigated by the disparity in the age. So, of course, 40 and 14, there's a big disparity. So he could get whatever he deserved. You understand me, Mr. Edwards?
Right, right.
All right, bless it.
Bless
That's it. All I wanted to put out.
All right, thank you so much for your call. Morning, the last caller seemed to be talking about himself. Okay, let's be kind. There is absolutely no way or reason a minor should be in a relationship with anyone, even if they had a child in their youth, because of a prior sexual behavior. It is absolutely wrong. Of course, it's a strict liability, and so you can't get away from that. Mr. Edwards, here is something that is needed, a national ID card, a way we can eliminate the use of fake ID that teenagers use to say that they're older. Because what if there are 15-year-olds out there pretending to be 16 and given consent for sex? Well, that is always going to be a touchy situation, a very troubling situation. But here is one of the things I want to highlight in my discussion. I believe that in this whole process, leadership needs to be loud and clear. Now, some persons may make the argument that we hear from our leaders in instances where things are happening. And, you know, you can roll with that. But to me, if there is a circumstance, a situation out there, I like to hear from leadership. But not just to hear from them, but I like to hear from them in a particular way. Now, I don't want anybody to point any fingers at me. I don't want to get in any trouble. But I'm going to single out a person. I'm going to single out a person because I am impressed by the way this individual has been very, very unequivocally clear in these issues. And that is the Deputy Prime Minister, the Honorable Chester Cooper. In two instances, at least two instances, one I think when there was a young lady who committed suicide, I saw something from him. He was very clear. He was brief enough, but long enough for the message to be fully conveyed. And so I believe that when I am listening for leadership on certain issues, and we also heard from the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister has been unequivocal. But for the moment, I'm just kind of isolating this one individual. I want the leadership message to be very, very clear. It needs to be extremely sensitive, taking into consideration all the sensibilities at play. So it needs to be clear. It needs to be sensitive. It need not be agreeable. I don't need necessarily to be 100% in agreement with what has been said, even though in certain issues like the one we're dealing with, it would be kind of difficult to, you know, reconcile if something really, really, really outrageous was said, which I couldn't really bend my mind to. But it doesn't have to be totally agreeable because we're looking at a wide swath of potential event. But express with consistency of values and standards that was espoused or is being espoused on an ongoing basis. So basically, whosoever you tell me that you are, whatsoever that you say you are, and whatsoever it is that you represent, your utterances ought to be consistent with that. Consistently. The utterance need to be of a calming nature, i.e., this is where I think emotional intelligence comes in. You don't jump into a fire to save a situation carrying a gallon of gas. You don't do that. What you do is you step into the moment, you assess it, and you say, how am I going to speak to this? What emotions are at play here? What type of raw nerve is being rubbed? And you understand that. And so when you speak, you have to speak in such a way that you're creating calm and soothing those raw emotions. So when I'm finished making the statement, there should be sufficient there to cause a pause for anyone who is involved or anyone who is looking on to take away something which kind of takes down the temperature. May not be totally, but it takes the temperature down a bit. The message should be carefully designed and carefully articulated such that a clear outcome is communicated. It may not work out. We may not get there, but it leads you to a place where you can say, okay, that is the desired outcome. And you can agree or disagree with it, but at the end of the day, it's an outcome against which you can measure the efficacy of what has been said. Because I could say to you, you know, I could write a thesis to you, for example, on the current circumstance. And then at the end, I say, give him 2 months. So a thesis against and showing you all the things that is bad, all the things that are disagreeable, all the things that you would agree with me on. And then at the end of the day, I say, well, you know, deserve 2 months, which you definitely won't agree with and which doesn't make sense because it doesn't line up with the arguments just made. And so I believe in this environment that the conversations are useful. The conversations go to the heart of the practice that we have of democracy, where the voice of the persons or the voice of the people is being heard, is being levied into the public square. And it is now for the leadership to respond to that and respond to that in a very fundamental way. The one thing I think sometimes leaders do is they move quickly, having determined what they believe to be the sentiment of everybody. Because right now, in the moment, there are raw emotions and their views being expressed with great conviction. But because we move too quickly, we fail to take in the total issue. We fail to create and weigh the balances. Because after all, legislation is about justice and equity. It should be about that. So even in, as one of the callers says, even in the instance where there is a perpetrator, they have to have some balance as to how they too are going to be protected. In the instance of the scenario given by the police caller, those circumstances need to be built into whatsoever the future solution is going to be, whatsoever the changes are going to be, such that when one looks on that circumstance and say an individual going to prison for X amount of time, that doesn't look like justice. So in the first instance, the impetus is there for responding. But the response should not be lightning fast or too fast, such that the totality, the effectiveness of what comes out in the end becomes useful to all factors, all things being considered, all factors, all factions of society. Or put another way, it is done in such a way that some persons are totally satisfied, but it creates a potential problem for others. So we should fix these. And I say this often, and I hope that persons kind of take it in the light that I wish it to be taken. Every single thing that we have, especially when we're talking about leadership at a national level, the laws, the policies, the conventions, and all of those things that we see at play, all of those things are simply tools in the hands of leadership. Everything that is or that isn't is a function of the effectiveness of leadership in the first instance. That's where I want us to sometime focus our attention. And if we do that, I think we are going to find, if we do that more often, I think we are going to find a circumstance where some of the complaints we have against leaders may start to go away because leaders will start to respond differently. Because we're not questioning the thing too much anymore. We're questioning actually the leader and the leadership. Great show as usual. Messing around with young girls is a mental and psychological problem. Those people are mentally sick. We could say that. We have one more call. Mr. Edwards, the other day a school asked me for a school, a schoolgirl asked me for a ride. She was with friends. I smiled. I didn't answer her and took it as a joke. I didn't indulge. Someone else might not be as strong as me, certainly. And you have to conduct yourself as a man. You're a man. You're a man. You ought to be a man. Leave young girls alone. We're going to leave the conversation there. We don't have a lot of time on the show, but I want to say to you, let's all continue. Let's all continue to focus on where we want to get as a community. I believe that in this time, you always hear me end these shows by saying Ubuntu. There's a principle called Ubuntu leadership, which is built on love, kindness, integrity, interconnectedness, empathy, and supportiveness. If we lead in that direction, if we lead with that as a foundation, I believe that great things will come out of this and some of the other issues that we have to deal with in our country. So all that's left for me to say is to be good, walk good, take care of yourself. COVID is not over, so be aware. One love, Ubuntu.